Speak up. Up. Speak, speak up. Speak up. Speak up. 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 Speak, speak up. Up. Speak up. Speak up.
Speak up.
Speak up. Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome. How you doing? Good. Me too. Thanks for joining me here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Katsi, Kwikwetlem, and other Coast Salish, Hunkaminam, and Squamish-speaking peoples. We're here on these unceded lands, which were never formally given up or surrendered or traded, and are therefore occupied lands. And in light of the history of this country and the relationship between settlers and indigenous people and the continuing ongoing disparity between the situations of these peoples, I think it's important to keep that in mind, especially as we enter into, well, I guess we're fully into a holiday season that, you know, is in many ways rooted in Christian understandings, European understandings of the world and tradition. And so as that's being presented to us in so many ways, it's important to think about all the other ways that we can think about the seasons and holidays and all that. Anyway, thanks for hanging out with me this hour. We've got a bit of a mixed bag, a bunch of different stuff. There will be a holiday tinge to things, as this is my last episode of Speak Up before Christmas, which I, as a non-religious, but I suppose culturally somewhat Christian person, celebrate. I don't go to church or really believe in God or do the whole belief thing. But I do enjoy the cultural parts of Christmas, family and giving people gifts and eating good meals and all the trappings. Last year, my girlfriend and I watched, I feel like, every single Christmas movie that exists. And this year, we're finding it a little hard to pick something to watch because we've watched them all so recently. Luckily, there's enough stuff out there that it's almost impossible to run out of things to consume. What a world. Anyway, let's get things started. I am going to have a piece about the Tummasoat Aquatic and Community Center winning a couple of awards, which is pretty cool. New aquatic center in New Westminster. We've got Danny put together an interview with the founder of Naloxone, Chloe Goodison. And we'll have a couple other LJI-related things. And, of course, I mentioned Christmas. Some of the stories, I guess, are Christmas-related, but the main holiday inspiration here is going to be musical. And we are able to do that in the traditional way that I like to do here on Speak Up Thursday edition, which is with some local music. So we are going to start off with truly, it was only released last year, but it's in the running for my favorite holiday track by a Vancouver artist, by the Plodes. I guess this was re-released last year. It originally came out in 2020, so it's had a bit of a runway. This is Superpowered Palestinian Baby.
Born in a barn to a teenage mom 4 years before his birth, with x-ray vision and super speed and a brain the size of Earth. He wore a big J on the front of his shirt. He loves everybody on this pile of dirt, from the geriatrics to the embryos. His real name was Josh, but finish electromagnetic force field to repel an asteroid.
Superpowered Palestinian Baby by The Plodes, which is on, well, two records. That's A Reindeer Stupid, A Plodes Christmas, and released as a single last year in December to raise funds for the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. So you can go to Bandcamp and buy that to both get the song and make a contribution to the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. Cool. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, and we're going to get to the talking. This is my piece about the Tummasoute Aquatic and Community Center in New Westminster. And instead of explaining more, I will just let the piece do the talking. New Westminster's Tummasoute Aquatic and Community Center is turning heads and winning awards. The state-of-the-art facility, whose name Tummasoute is the Hunkamina word for sea otter house, has achieved a RHF Accessibility Certified Gold rating under the Rick Hansen Foundation's Accessibility Certification Program and won the Prix Versailles 2024 World Title Special Prize for an Interior in the sports category. The Prix Versailles is an award based on a review of architectural media from around the world, highlighting the most discussed projects within the architecture community. Paul Fast, principal architect for the firm HCMA, which designed the Tummasoute Aquatic and Community Center, explains why Tummasoute was selected as the 2024 winner.
Well, the project has achieved a number of notable firsts, which has really helped elevate it to a fairly prominent position in the media over the past few months. And so it's the first all-electric aquatic center of its kind, which is a whole new way of thinking about this typology of building. It's the first zero-carbon design aquatic facility in Canada. It achieved incredibly high standards for accessibility and inclusion through a number of design interventions. And so I think all of these things in combination really created a project that grabbed people's attention. And so it's been featured quite extensively in the media. And people are paying attention because they're looking for projects that are sort of defining what the future is of this building type in the design world.
As a public, community-oriented facility, the Tummasoute Aquatic and Community Center sticks out from its competition, including large-scale projects like the Olympic Aquatic Center in Saint-Denis, France, and Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, home of the National Football League's New England Patriots.
I think it's a fantastic validation of the importance of this building type in sports architecture. Most awards programs, when they focus on sports buildings, tend to focus on the really large kind of mega projects and stadiums. And of course, those have their own kind of impact. But we know that recreation is incredibly important to communities, to the everyday life of people here in our country. And we know that these buildings play a crucial role in the kind of social fabric of communities. And so for this building to be recognized amongst those other really large-scale projects is really satisfying and rewarding.
The building is also notable for its use of and relationship to the surrounding landscape, which Fast says is a great example of architecture that works with the land instead of against it.
It's actually one of my favorite parts of the whole story of the building, because if you look back at the original condition of that site, sort of pre-settlement or pre-contact, there was a ravine there, which we named Glenbrook Ravine. And that ravine was a natural feature that had an ecology around it. The First Nations used it for various things. It was over, as settlement occurred, they put a 2-meter sewer line down the bottom of it and then backfilled it with all sorts of junk. And it really became kind of a symbol of the way in which we work against the land rather than with it. So one of the first steps for our building design process was to actually say, let's bring back the memory of that ravine because it was important and it was lost and it's worth recognizing. So rather than take the building and orient the building to the street grid. We said, let's turn the whole building so it faces the ravine. And it essentially, we're saying that the most important thing for this building is to interact with the memory of that ravine. And so we created this large public green space that is essentially the reincarnation at a surface level of that ravine landscape, and made all of the building windows face into it, all of the kind of key building alignments, circulation pathways feed into that kind of green space. And so some of the things we're learning from our Indigenous friends is that the principles around how you build with land as opposed to against it, that was one of the key moments. It also allowed us to, one of the other funny things about the street grid in New Westminster is it doesn't face perfectly north. And so if you build a building that aligns with the street grid, it will not face perfectly north. It faces about a 45 degree angle off. That becomes really important for a pool, because how you bring light into a pool is really important. You need to control it for glare and for lifeguarding safety, all those things. And so not only aligning the building with the ravine not only gave us a powerful connection to the landscape, but it brought in a north-facing light that was really comfortable and safe and really pleasant for people in swimming in the pool. So those are some of the strategies we used then when we say working with the land as opposed to against it.
A key reason for the city's Prix Versailles title is the focus on accessibility, which was also recognized through its achievement of an RHF Accessibility Certified Gold rating from the Rick Hansen Foundation's Accessibility Certification Program. Mayor Patrick Johnstone says the building, which is the City of New Westminster's largest capital project to date, was designed for people of all ages and abilities from the ground up, with accessibility in mind.
The city took an intentional approach to accessibility in this building. When we were doing the design work and the planning work with the community 5-6 years ago, the accessibility community talked about the importance of including accessibility at the design phase. Quite often you will build a building like this, you'll design a building, and then you will add on the accessibility elements to make sure that everyone has access to it. But we were intentional in starting right at the beginning with the design and having the accessibility community tell us what accessibility meant to them, and giving that to the designers, but then also including professionals who could bring an accessibility lens to every step of the design. So when it was still lines on paper, they could walk through that and actually look at the accessibility barriers and the challenges that we were creating before we created them. And the goal was, obviously, to get as close to universal accessibility as we could, but also to not have to tack things off after, to actually make it integrated into design so we save money and save time and start on the right step.
Centering accessibility and making it a key part of the aquatic and community center's design is representative of the city's overall accessibility strategy, which includes in-depth community consultation and the consideration of intersecting and often contradicting accessibility needs.
Universal accessibility is the goal. It's very difficult to achieve because quite often if you design for some forms of accessibility to remove some barriers, you end up creating barriers for other forms. Things like creating very bright and vibrant color fabrics for wayfinding and such is great for people who might have visual disabilities, but it might also be a problem for people who have neurodiversity issues and may find too much sensory input, making it confusing for them to navigate a space. You try to design so that you can address both of those as best as you can and try to find the balance in that space. Some of the accessibility elements you can't add afterwards. There are things like the zero-step entry for the recreation pool that you just can't design in afterwards. It also took us a creative approach to address accessibility in the competition pool, because you can't have a sloped entry into a competition pool, so we had to find another alternative that worked with the modern competition pool designs.
Brad McCannell is the Vice President of Access and Inclusion at the Rick Hansen Foundation.
There's all kinds of things the RHFAC professional will be looking for. But the other thing to recognize is that every site's different. Everybody's got a different goal in mind. The level of access provided depends on the occupancy on the site and the use of the building. So the assessor will come in and start looking for, certainly you have to meet code, you have to meet regulations, there's no doubt about that. How did you go above and beyond that?
McCannell explains that beyond providing ratings so that potential users can understand how accessible a given building might be, the Rick Hansen Foundation Accessibility Certification Program aims to shift the conversation around accessibility.
This is a cultural shift that we're looking for. This is trying to get everybody, the owner, the operator, the architect, the planner, the people swinging the hammers, to understand the old model, which is building a house or a building for 18 to 55-year-old males. That old model is not doing anybody any good, because the moment you put up a building, it needs to be retrofitted. So that's killing your budgets. It's killing your sustainability rating, because I go in there and I tear everything out and drywall goes to the landfill. Understanding that what the RHFAC is actually doing is shifting culture. It's training architects. It's exposing them to ideas they haven't seen before. And most importantly, it's exposing them to the return on investment that's available.
Part of the reason for the Tummasaut Aquatic and Community Center's success at achieving accessibility is that accessibility was a key focus from the beginning of the design process, instead of attempting to retrofit solutions once the center had already been built.
One of our real goals as part of the culture shift is to move accessibility, move universal design, the practical application of universal design, to move that into the normal everyday design process. This is where the victories are. You look at sustainability, for example. In the 70s, sustainability was just an academic discussion around the table. But by the new millennium, the LEED program for sustainability had moved that into common everyday building process. And they did that by simple education, by having a course offered to professionals in the field that could be recognized as their normal professional development, and just brought them along, helped them understand the real issues around sustainability. They were able to take that concept, and instead of it being something you add at the end of a project, they had people, because it was part of their normal professional development, they brought sustainability to the water cooler, to the carpool, to the lunchroom. And that's what we were able to do with the RHFAC program, by having professionals take the courses, get the accreditation. All of a sudden now it's part of the discussion everywhere. It's not something you add after the fact, like it's landscaping. The thing about aging-in-place solutions, the thing about the practical application of universal design, it can affect everything if you let it. And so having it part of the process, the normal design process, not something separate, not something you do after, like it's landscaping, that's a really critical piece of the whole concept.
McCannell says that this kind of accessibility-centered design is hugely important and benefits everyone, whether disabled or able-bodied.
Able-bodied people, we call you TABS. See, we got names for you too. We call you TABS because you're only temporarily able-bodied. Doesn't matter if you do a face plant when you're a teenager and you end up in a wheelchair, or you're 75 and you need a walker and a hearing aid, you will be part of our community sooner or later. The largest minority group in the world, and the only one that anyone can join at any moment. Fall down the stairs, an illness, a car accident, maybe you just get old. You're going to be part of this community. It's not us and them, it's just us. This is about me, it's about you, it's about your mom.
From the Tummasaut Aquatic and Community Center in New Westminster, I'm Jesse Wensloff for CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, reporting. This piece was made possible with funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can find this piece online at frequencynews.ca.
This holiday season, when it's time to choose the right tree, some trees will be chosen for their size, some for their shape, and some for their shelter. Let's have fewer people under a tree this Christmas. Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca. Help the Canadian Alliance to end homelessness.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. We are here in studio. You just heard my piece about the Tummasaut Aquatic and Community Center. Go check it out. It's super cool out in New Westminster. You can go for a swim. You can. When I was there, they had in one room, there were a whole bunch of people playing pickleball. The next gym over, there was a giant inflatable bouncy castle with a whole bunch of kids running around. And then there's also two pools and a gym, like a multi-story gym with a whole bunch of different gear. Very cool. And that's on top of all the other sort of accessibility features and the actual design of the building and the way it's oriented and the outside features. Very cool. Cannot recommend it enough. We love a good community building here. And I'm just going to keep things rolling. We're going to hear another Christmassy tune. This is going to come from the Kingfisher Blues Christmas single, 2024 edition. Kingfisher Blues is a DIY record label based in Vancouver, BC. Their tagline, releasing Records for Really Great People since 2011, which is great. Tim the Mute is, Tim is the man behind the record, puts out his own music as Tim the Mute, and every Christmas puts out a Christmas single with generally local, but not always local, versions of classic Christmas songs, sometimes an original Christmas or holiday song, and this is paired with an annual Christmas party. That is a big concert. This year's 17th annual Kingfisher Blues Christmas Party happened this past Sunday, December 15th, featuring artists like Melt, Spank Williams, Kylie V, Cam Blake, La Lune, Flat Earth, Cherry Pick, Tall Mary Buddy, Tim the Mute, Grade School, Textile Video Archive, Luke Beach Brown, and Kid in PJ's Computer, Patrick Ferrugia, and David Ivan Neal. That's right, so many people. Five of those artists are on the Kingfisher Blues Christmas Single 2024. Proceeds from the concert, and as well as from this Christmas single, 100% of the profits benefit 1-800-SUICIDE and the Crisis Center of BC. So a great cause, and also some great tunes. You can find this on Bandcamp, Kingfisher Blues with a Z, Kingfisher Blues with a Z, .bandcamp.com. You'll find it there. And we are going to hear Patrick Ferrugia, who is a favorite of mine and of the Vancouver Mixtape, my other show, which airs on Sundays at 8 p.m. This is a classic of, or a cover of, well, some people would call it one of the worst Christmas songs out there. No offense, Mr. McCartney, but this is Wonderful Christmas Time, Patrick Ferrugia's version. Welcome back to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. That was Patrick Ferrugia's version of Wonderful Christmas Time. And now we're going to hear a piece by Danny to inspire a little holiday spirit.
This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby, reporting from North Vancouver. From Sizzling Spatzel to Bratwurst on the Grill. The Shipyard's Christmas Market, located in the Lower Lonsdale area of North Vancouver, provides a unique gastronomic experience for those attending, all without an entrance fee, something that has become rare at many Christmas markets throughout the Lower Mainland. This is the market's very first year, so CJSF decided to take a visit to learn more about how this new Christmas market came to be. Once we arrived at the market, we were able to speak with John Van Rye, one of the market's founding organizers. During our conversation, we were able to learn of his motivations as well as grievances, that led him to start the shipyard's Christmas market.
I was frustrated, and I think a lot of people are, that entertainment is costing more and more money. So a lot of people are struggling with rent, mortgages, putting food on the table. If you are getting divorced, or if you're a senior, or are you becoming disabled, it's extremely hard to come by these days. And then when you want entertainment, it's costing a fortune, and it's getting more and more expensive each day. And a lot of the entertainment in the Lower Mainland are pretty heavily priced. Like, you know, you pay maybe for a market $22, but you know, you go to a hockey game, costs you a couple of hundred bucks just for one person. Go to a Taylor Swift concert, see what that costs, right? Yeah. So, it was definitely a frustration on my part, and also because I'm European, I'm from Amsterdam. I know that Christmas market is supposed to be free. So that was something that I thought, like, you know, I think that Christmas markets, especially Christmas, should be accessible to everybody, regardless of what your income is or your social status or anything like that.
According to Van Rij, despite this being the market's first year and starting recently on November 29th, the market has proven to be extremely popular within the past couple of weeks.
Oh, it's been phenomenal. I was very nervous. On Friday, when we opened, I was like, well, you know, did people know about us? Like, you know, did the word get out and everything else? And then on Friday, we just got slammed. It was really, really busy. Saturday and Sunday, exactly the same. All the vendors were like, okay, well, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday will be a lot more relaxed, because markets do in general anyways. But then once it gets dark, the lights go on, and especially around dinner time, it really picked up. And when I listen to the vendors, everybody's really pleasantly surprised. It's much busier than we expected. But like I said, last weekend was absolutely phenomenal. We were packed.
Later on, Van Rij goes over some of the challenges that come across when creating a brand new Christmas market.
What happens is our market's been put together this year within 6 months. It should be taken a year, but it's been 6 months. There are certain things that are part of this market that normally needs a long approval time. There's people who are inspecting things, there are people that need to be part of it. And especially when you talk about bureaucrats, obviously, you know, they take their time, right? And they have their procedures, and some of these procedures can take a long time. So that's basically what we've been fighting against, right? Like, we've constantly been trying to fast track things, which is not something they're used to. Some people perhaps are not really willing to do that. We had our struggles, but overall I would say that it's been very positive.
Lastly, Van Rij spoke about his hopes for the Shipyard's Christmas Market to inspire more Christmas markets to open up throughout the Lower Mainland.
Definitely, I think that there's room for it, right? Like, there's been a lot of people that are like, oh, you're competing against the Vancouver one. And I've never seen them as a competition, because I believe there is more enough space for more, right? Especially if you got 2.8 million people, right? There's more enough space for this. But yeah, at the same time, I think, like, you know, if you're looking at further down in the valley, like, you know, in the Chilliwack, Mission, and Agassiz area, like that kind of areas, past Abbotsford, or maybe Abbotsford included, sure, there should be another one right there. Well, maybe I will take that initiative, but I don't see why somebody else couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But I hope, though, and if they do it, that they do it for free admission, because I think that's really keen. I mean, they do it the rest of the world. I don't see why, you know, here in Canada, we have to have a pay-to-play kind of model.
The Shipyard's Christmas Market will be going on until December 24th, 2024. And while this is the first year that this market is being held, plans are in place to continually improve the experience for those that attend, as well as to hopefully inspire more Christmas markets throughout the Lower Mainland. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This piece would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Don't turn that dial. This is the right station if you want to hear, hear.